Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, July 26th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad to have you with me today. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, good to be here.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. What I'd like to talk about first is, John, there's yet another chapter in your MacBook repair saga.
The continuing saga, yes. Part one was about a failure of a 2018 MacBook Pro after a few months. The ports were wonky. He couldn't get a stable display port signal to the external display. The keyboard would, external keyboard would conk out. Disk drives wouldn't mount, or they would mount after 20-minute wait. So it was pretty bad. So part one talked about the failure. Part two talked about taking it into the Apple store and the pretty nice experience we had getting it fixed. It was out and back in 5 days and came back perfect. And, of course, the SSD was soldered into the motherboard, so we got a new SSD with a new copy of macOS Pristine, and we had to set it up. And then part three was the process of restoring the Mac, testing it, which I published yesterday. And the first thing we did was set up an administrator account to test it before we tried to do carbon copy clone or restore, and we couldn't connect to on the internet. And the first thing we wondered was, you know, what's wrong with our Wi-Fi? What's wrong with Firefox? What's going on? It was a pristine Mac copy of macOS 10.14.3. And did some Google search and discovered that the factory in Houston that repaired it sent it back with the clock set at Central Daylight Time. And when Firefox woke up in the Mountain Time Zone with the clock sent to Central Daylight Time, it was very much annoyed and wouldn't cooperate. I had never heard of that before. Apparently, that's a thing with Firefox, not Safari.
Interesting.
That was interesting. So we got that taken care of, and then we got ready to do carbon copy cloner. And, of course, we tested some drives that would attach, and they mounted, and we mounted right away, so everything was cool with the USB-C ports. We could see the drives. We could look at the files, and we thought, okay, wow, we're ready to do a carbon copy clone. And so we attached the carbon copy clone drive and said, boot from this drive, and the Mac said, nope, you can't do that.
Oh, no.
That's because the factory default out of the box for a new logic board and a new T2 chip is the default of not being able to boot from an external media. Now, Brian wrote a great article in the context of the iMac Pro where it first appeared, but I had written a second article about how the T2 chip affects your disk storage. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that one because I wrote it. No. Bad words for Brian there. Your article was better than mine, more extensive, more comprehensive. But I remember mine because I wrote it. And so we started up in recovery mode and went to the startup security utility, which dictates the level of security, the firmware password, and whether you can boot from external devices. And fortunately, that was an easy thing to do. And you say allow booting from external media, and you do a reboot. And you're up and running, and we said a prayer for novices when we were done. So then we did a carbon copy clone restore, which was glorious. When you boot from the external carbon copy cloner drive and launch carbon copy cloner on that drive, it recognizes that it was a clone of your internal drive and says, hey, I'm a clone of your Macintosh HD drive. Do you want to do a restore? Would you like me to walk you through it? And we go, yay. And there's little yellow flags that tell you exactly what to do. And it's carbon copy cloner is just a joy. And so after about 45 minutes, the MacBook Pro was restored exactly as it was before with its keychain intact and all passwords intact. And bit copied all over and we booted up and there we were, 10.14.5. And all things intact. So we thought, wow, we're skating, home free. And then my spouse checks her copy of Microsoft Office, and it goes, nope, You're illegal. You're trying to run your licensed copy of Microsoft Office on a different Mac.
Oh, no.
Cough, cough. So there's no way around that I know of. I got to talk to Microsoft about how they recommend you deal with that. But my spouse was in a hurry, and she had a huge discount from the university. And so she just said, oh, I won't mess with that. I'll just go ahead and pay for a low-cost second copy. Installed it, and now she has a licensed copy of Office running. And then it was time, when everything was straight with the MacBook Pro by itself, to start connecting external devices. There's a external 34-inch display, keyboards, trackball, printer, Time Machine drives, all that stuff is designed to go, designed by us to go through a dock. And we had just taken delivery of a really nice Otherworld Computing 14-port Thunderbolt dock. And nothing worked. So that's part four coming soon.
Interesting. Okay.
It's 10:45.
So it was brought home to us that when a Mac fails and you get a new logic board, there's a whole lot of stuff to do. And it's not like dusting crops, kids.
Yeah, recovering from a bad logic board ain't like dusting crops. That's true.
Yeah.
I'll give you that, because I had, I think it was my logic board replaced on my computer, because I had a failing SSD. And I also had a slowly delaminating display. So I ended up with like a whole bunch of new bits and pieces on mine when I got it back last fall. And it was the same sort of thing that you went through with like a bunch of little kind of landmines along the way, trying to get back to where I started.
Yeah.
Oh, this doesn't work. Oh, that's not going to happen. Imagine. This isn't the same computer, but it's totally the same computer. Yeah, it's the same computer, but it's not the same computer. Like I ended up in like that sort of circular logic a few times, and it was frustrating.
Can you imagine the look on somebody's face when they're fairly new to the Mac? You know, they just came over from Windows, they're a switcher, and they're told they can't boot from external drives, and they have to do command R startup, and they have to use the startup security utility, and they must feel like right, oh my god, I'm overwhelmed.
I think they'll still be pleased, because it's still less gyrations than coming back from a bad Windows install. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
So it'll still feel like less stuff.
My feeling throughout the process was there's got to be a better way to do this. I mean, I know that Apple requires you to boot up in recovery mode in order to change the security settings. Mm-hmm. And I know that certain software licenses are keyed to the hardware ID so that you don't pirate the software.
Right.
But still, you know, this specter of the whole thing makes one wish that there were a better way to do things.
Well, and part of that comes from it used to be a lot less complicated, I think.
Because security wasn't there.
Because there was no security at all, so nobody, you know, it didn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's why we said a prayer for novices. We just go,
Yeah, I totally understand.
And a good thing that Brian and I had both written that article, which I linked to in the part three, and I highly recommend readers go review that article. It also talks about how the T2 chip encrypts your drive, but it encrypts your drive only while it's in the machine, because it has access to the hardware ID. If you want your chips to be fully encrypted, if somebody removes the SSD chips from the motherboard and tries to munch through your data, mm-hmm. you have to do a full file vault turn on to prevent that. So, and it's funny, because I asked out of curiosity, when I was doing the initial reservation to bring the machine in a week later for repair, I asked the concierge, I said, do you recommend we turn on File Vault? And he said, only if there's classified data on the machine, because Apple security is very good, and we protect your computer. If your File Vault isn't on, we, you know, either fully erase it. I assume he was suggesting they either fully erase the chips or destroy them, or do something to protect the data on a machine that's turned in. We turned on FileVault anyway, and it's of little consequence because they have ways of booting the machine into a hardware test from the recovery partition, and they'll never have to have your password, never have to see your data anyway. So you might as well go ahead and turn FileVault on to fully encrypt the chips. Whether they're in the computer or not, they're encrypted.
Yeah, classified seems like a pretty high bar.
Yeah, I know. I was surprised when he said that. But then he also said, we recommend arriving early for your appointment. And we got there like 30 minutes early, and the tech to come out to get the machine and diagnose the problem was 10 minutes late. So we've sat chatting with people in the Apple store for 40 minutes. So why they said arrive early, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm thinking like I'm not going to arrive early, but thanks.
Yeah. Well, you know, we figured better to get on the list because the first thing to do when you walk in is you say, I have an appointment, and the concierge checks you in and he says, yes, you are marked as here, John. Mm-hmm. So we figure, you know, if there was any doubling up or delays in the queue to get repaired, we better be on time or ahead of time. But still, we had fun because we were sitting across the table from a father and his 12-year-old girl, and she was getting a new iPhone XR. She had an iPhone 6, and she was slid up like a light bulb. She was so happy and giggly. And Megan, one of the Apple salespeople we know pretty well, came over and started her with the process of transferring her data from the 6 to the 10R. And I've never seen a little girl so happy in all my life. And her father was just kind of like glowing too. It was an interesting experience.
Thanks, John. I appreciate getting the update on that, and I will have a link to that in the show notes. If you have tips or tricks about hardware repair, then let us know. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us as TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. And right now, I'd like to spend a moment talking to you about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is OmniFocus. And OmniFocus is a professional to-do manager that helps you, as the tagline says, accomplish more every day. OmniFocus is available on macOS, and it's a universal iOS app for both iPhone and iPad. And it has an Apple Watch complication that will let you view, add, and mark tasks completed right from your wrist. It remembers everything for you, makes planning and reviewing easy, and it helps you finish projects on time with reminders based on due dates and locations and lots more criteria. So if you're a GTD person, or if you want to believe you are a GTD person, OmniFocus is the perfect trusted system because you can enter tasks from anywhere, so you've always got everything sitting in your inbox. This now includes OmniFocus for the web as another place that you can enter data. This is where all the work PC people can now continue to use OmniFocus to update everything, because you can even view all that stuff on your Windows computer at work. You can upgrade to the pro version to get even more customization for viewing tasks in perspectives, in forecasts, AppleScript functionality to automate some of that stuff, and loads more. Download your free 2-week trial at OmniFocus.com, and we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Our other topic today is CBS and DirecTV are, we'll say they're quarreling. They're squabbling a little bit. So if you have DirecTV, you may not have CBS right now. And if you do have CBS because you don't have DirecTV, you've probably got that scroll along the bottom of your CBS affiliate that's telling you that DirecTV isn't carrying CBS anymore, and football season is coming, and if you want to keep watching NCIS, you really need to call DirecTV and tell them to just get it together. At least that's what's scrolling along the bottom of the CBS affiliate here. So, like, when I read things like this, I sort of think partly that this seems like a desperate move on like between CBS and DirecTV to be taking this out on consumers. And it sort of seems like the kind of thing, because this isn't the first time we've heard this sort of thing happen. It sort of seems like the kind of things that are making it a more and more compelling argument to just get rid of cable altogether and live life with streaming services.
I think that's the key. You just nailed it on the head. The content owners know that the future is their direct connection to the customer. and then going through these third parties like DirecTV and other cable companies is on the way out. And so with CBS All Access available to the customer on the internet, and by the way, I saw another report that said that CBS All Access subscriptions were surging, and that must please CBS and give them hope that they don't have to be really too worried about the negotiation stance.
Yeah.
But the title of the Bloomberg article I point to yesterday is CBS Blackout on DirecTV is What's Wrong with the TV Market.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And by the way, I can tell you exactly why CBS All Access subscriptions are surging. They dropped a new Picard trailer at Comic-Con, and it looks amazing. And there are so many good people in it, and I'm really, really excited. And I currently don't have CBS All Access, but I think I'm going to have CBS All Access. And DirecTV, AT&T, whoever it is that's behind all that, like, they're not going to have anything to say about it. And yeah, I personally am super excited. So I totally see why there's a whole bunch of people that are signing up for All Access. And, you know, like we saw this, I think, Brian, you may remember, I think it was AMC was one of the channels that was part of some sort of package dispute because it was like, there are people who didn't get to see Mad Men this week. And, you know, and there's been a couple of other times where something like this has happened. And like I would find it frustrating if this were happening to me, but like, you know, I also know that sometimes part of these negotiations are why we have things like ESPN 8, The Ocho, you know, and well, stuff like that is they force these packages all together.
It's not, that's not what this is about. This is about a studio network wanting more money for the rights to carry their product. And for the carrier, DirecTV in this case, not wanting to pay all that more money. This entire, like CBS is not necessarily the good guys here. This sort of negotiation, including the ugliness that we're seeing where I'm a DirecTV Now subscriber. So I get DirecTV, but it's through through the internet versus a satellite dish. And this is why our costs for subscribing to a cable service are constantly escalating.
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, and that's on CBS's side.
Yes.
The keeping us from watching it as a negotiation tactic is on DirecTV side. So if you listen to CBS, they'll tell you that, you know, hey, we're just trying to keep up with the Joneses. And if you listen to DirecTV, they're saying CBS is asking for like more money than has ever been printed in the history of the world. And you know, and we just can't afford it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to find the good guy here, period. And I'm not going to just pin this on CBS, and I'm not going to just pin this on DirecTV.
I agree.
There's no, yeah, I'm with you 100%.
But
there's no good
guy. The question is, I wonder myself what CBS's basis is for raising the rates. Is it just because they want to make more money? Is it greed? Is it because?
Well, yeah, it's always capitalism.
Yeah,
but I mean, they say that the contract that they have with DirecTV was signed in 2012, and that the market has changed substantially since then. So what they're asking for, according to them, are to have new rates that are in line with rates. Actually, they use a fun bar. They said that they're just asking DirecTV to pay the same rates that CBS has struck with other DirecTV competitors, as opposed to necessarily competitors to CBS. Are you with me there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the bar that they're setting is, well, we've successfully extracted all this money from everybody else, so we should be able to extract the same amount of money from DirecTV.
Yeah.
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, it is nice work if you can get it, yeah. But, I mean, you know, at the origin of it is the fact that, you know, this basically was a seven-year-old contract that has come up, and really because CBS wouldn't accept what DirecTV offered even as a temporary negotiating rate. DirecTV doesn't have the right to carry CBS because the contract is expired.
You know, I wonder if my perspective on this is skewed. You tell me what you think. My feeling is there's so much stuff to watch. We've been watching a whole bunch of stuff on Netflix and Amazon Prime this summer. There is more content there than you can watch in a lifetime. It's summer. NCIS is not running original content. I don't have to worry about missing Colbert for a short period of time. You know, just switch over and watch Fallon for a while. I'm not really annoyed by this.
I'd be annoyed if I was forced to watch Jimmy Fallon.
I figure it's going to be worked out in time. In the meantime, I fire up Netflix and watch my favorite shows. And I'm really kind of relaxed about the whole thing. I feel that the people who are in trouble about this are people who are obsessed, the people who, you know, got to have something. They get enraged. They feel like, you know, I'm being deprived. I got to do something. I got to subscribe to CBS All Access. Oh, my God, I'm missing my show. I don't feel that way because there's so much content out there. Am I alone in this?
Because of the content.
That's what you're thinking.
Yeah, because of the content. I would say you're not alone in that. But my assessment of this right now is, Brian, I think you inadvertently hit it on the head with DirecTV does not have the right to be broadcasting CBS because... what's one of the big things that we've heard about in streaming media lately? It's the rights to Friends are going away. The rights to The Office are going away. So if people were sort of skittish about subscribing to a streaming service because, you know, I can go sign up for Netflix, but all the stuff I like on Netflix is going away because it's all going back to CBS. And so then I'd have to buy All Access. Or Amazon Prime has this deal for that show that I love and it's going away at the end of the year because HBO's got a new service, whatever it is, right? Like people have always sort of worried about, that's why we have articles all the time about like what's coming and going from Netflix this month.
And yeah, I think those articles just fan the flames of obsession.
Well, but I think part of it, like sometimes it's good to know, right? Like if you're trying to watch all of The Office, you need to know when it's leaving, you know, but aside from that, like that was one of the things that always made people go, well, I can't cut the cord because like I never know what stuff is going to be available to me. Well, guess what? When you use the cord, apparently it's the same thing. So like if you can't guarantee that one of the major broadcast networks is going to be reliably available to you, and the reason for that is because you have DirecTV, like first of all, this will never be a problem for me because I will never get DirecTV because there isn't a DirecTV where I live.
The upshot is that the industry is teaching people to be not concerned about what they can get because you've been wrapped around the axle so many times and frustrated and jumped through hoops and you have to subscribe here and subscribe there and you lose this and you lose that. The industry is basically teaching people not to care about the content, and what they're going to end up doing is they're going to pick the service that they think is the best for them, is most reliable, based on other concepts than content. And they have to be careful there because somebody can kind of, you know, take the wind out of their sails, like maybe Apple.
Well,
by having a reliable, fun source of content that they don't have to fuss with.
Apple could lose access to something the exact same way.
Exactly.
So could this.
Well, they're notable for building all this original content.
Right. As of now, they don't have access to anything they didn't make, so odds are good they're going to get to keep all that.
We've heard rumors of them buying rights to the studio, another studio, but then they would buy those rights and have them in perpetuity. Like if they owned Sony Pictures,
right,
they would own those rights and there wouldn't be any disruption.
Right. But until then, Apple and their eight shows are going to be available forever.
So maybe the dynamics will change in the future. Will people make decisions other than being obsessed by particular shows?
Well,
I think
that's maybe. I think so.
It's really, yeah, I admire your perspective on that, John. I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah, I know.
Only because as soon as we're done here, I have to go post a whole nother podcast that's a podcast about a trailer for a show that I'm not even going to get to see until next year. Anyway, the thing to me about this, though, is that I feel like they think that they're so clever. Each of them thinks they're so clever by letting whatever tactic it is they're doing play out. But I think all they're really doing is showing people that cable can treat you the same way as the streaming services do. So why not make that leap? I feel like moves like this are going to just accelerate that sort of cord cutting for people that are kind of on the edge of, you know, like I've seriously considered it, but you know, once there are easy ways to access live sports, I think there's going to be a whole lot of people who finally get rid of cable once and for all and not mess with the rest of this stuff that I don't watch.
You can do what I'm doing and just sit back and relax and wait for the thing to sort out, and you're not missing anything really important.
Okay, we're all wired differently, and there's like no one answer.
I know, but it's fun to talk about.
So we're going to go ahead and call it, but John and I are going to continue for another half an hour as we try to continue to disagree with each other. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead, like I said, and call it for today. Brian, thanks so much for coming by today.
Yep.
And John, thanks so much for being here.
Yep.
Once again, I'm glad you didn't have your belt today. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. I will talk to all of you again soon. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.